Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape. And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
It's not bad, Amosi wasn't out there. Like, that's my...
Touchdown goal! Score!
From the Town Fair Tire Studios, Boston's home for sports is...
Now Horford, 2-for-2, and a steal.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
You know who has it when you hear the boos. Gordon Hayward works his way to the three-point line. Long two, splash. Gordon Hayward is 2-for-2.
Boom shakalaka. That's how you answer your critics.
One of the things that we knew coming in was that there was going to be a lot of emotion on their side and in his fans and everything else, but I thought that he did a lot of good things and probably not the easiest position to be in, but I thought he handled it well from a playing standpoint.
Hour number two, Gasper and Murray. It is the Sports Hub Celtics Show, taking you up until 1 o'clock. A full hour of Celtics programming here. No Big Jim, Adam Jones in for Big Jim. He's in Nashville. Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe here, of course. We'll be taking your phone calls, 617-779-0985. I will tell you, Gasper, I got out of here a little early last night because the Celtics were on our air. I dozed off during the Celtics game. I didn't mean to.
I don't blame you.
I dozed off during the Celtics game, but fortunately for me, I woke up right in the middle of NBCSN replaying the game. So I ended up re-catching it without having to like watch it off my DVR or anything this morning. Live in the middle of the night. Kid was up screaming his head off, so I, you know, went and dealt with that. And then I watched the end of the Celtics game last night. They didn't win. Spoiler alert. Celtics wound up losing in Utah last night. This nightmare road trip continues. And in the meantime, Gordon Hayward back in Utah with what some are calling a good performance. I guess he distributed the ball okay.
I think he had 7 assists.
He looked like he was moving maybe slightly better than he had been.
He did seem to be smoother than he has been at any point this year. I mean, the overall numbers were not great, 3 of 9, but there was a smoothness to his game that has been missing.
But I don't know. It seems like a guy who's still searching for his game. It seems like a guy who's still not comfortable. And obviously, maybe that's a tough spot to get comfortable in when they're booing you every time you touch the basketball, like Gordon Hayward was last night. Let's start with Hayward specifically, I guess, before we get into the Celtics and their problems,
yeah,
of which there are many. I don't know. How do you feel about the Gordon Hayward experience so far?
Honestly, I feel like at this point, they're sort of in a mode where they are prioritizing Gordon's return and development as a player over sort of the team at this point, because I think the minutes and the role he has right now, it's not warranted by his performance. And I think there's a little bit of him stunting the growth of Tatum and Brown. Now, that wasn't the case last night. Tatum had a good game, nice bounce-back game after the Phoenix game.
No Kyrie helps for that, right?
Because there's
more touches. Not that you don't want Kyrie playing, but when Kyrie's out, it's a little easier to get everyone their touches and their shots and their minutes.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that, you know, when I look at, like, go back to the Indiana game, the worst offensive ratings in that game for the Celtics had Hayward on the floor. And so there are things that he does well. Like, you know, I liked early in that game the pick and roll he had with Al. That was a great little pocket pass to him. He is a good passer. But right now, I think he's not really assertive on the offensive end. The first basket he scored, Jaylen Brown fed him for a layup. The second basket was a nice long
Jump shot. He kind of stepped into.
Should have been
a
three, yeah. But it was good. And then the third basket, they had him come off basically like a double screen. He knocked down a three. I want to see more of the last two things. I think what they need him to do is help them space the floor by shooting the ball from the perimeter. You know, I keep saying, Jones, that he kind of has to be, for this to work, he has to be like the Kevin Love. Like, we know you can do all these other things, and when we need you to do them, we'll ask you to do them.
But get out of the way.
But right now, we kind of need you to just stand in the corner and shoot these threes. And every once in a while, we'll call a pick and roll for you. And when Kyrie's out of the game, if we want to play Kyrie off the ball.
You know what?
You know, we'll do that.
That's not a bad way to think about it. You're getting the Chris Bosh, Kevin Love treatment.
Yeah.
Where obviously he has a different skill set, but
yes.
Get out of the way. Go stand in the corner. When we need you, we'll get you in the mix. That's honestly not a bad way to think about it. I hadn't considered that, but that's not a bad way to think about it with him.
No, I mean, I think that's sort of what they need him to do, but instead it's the Celtics want the full Gordon Hayward experience, and he's not there yet. And so my question to you is,
do you think it's the Celtics? Or do you think it's the head coach there?
Oh, Brad? There is a little, as I said this yesterday on Felger Mass, it does feel, Brad does feel a little league daddish right now. Like, my kid's going to play no matter what with Gordon Hayward.
Yep.
It feels a little like that.
Yeah. My kid was on the all-star team in the other league. Well, the other coach knew how to use him. Well, I guess Brad wouldn't say that about himself, but you understand. The analogy that I've made is he's kind of the teacher's pet. That's kind of the analogy that I've made. I like Little League Dad.
Little League Dad, feel free to take that.
No,
use
Little,
that.
Little League Dad is
on,
way better.
Use that on the Adam Jones Show.
It's better than, you know, Gordon Hayward coming in and polishing apples for
you
Brad
know, Little
Stevens.
League Dad, like, look, other parents, I realize my kid's not as good right now as some of your kids, but he's my kid. He's going to play.
Yeah.
He's in a starring role.
Ah, well, gee willikers, guys. I gotta get my boy out there. He's an all-star in the other league. He was an all-star out west. So anyway, I don't quite know why they're so fixated on rushing it now, too, because, I mean, one, he's on a minutes restriction, so you already know you're not getting the full thing out of him. And secondarily, it's so obvious, and the word you use is probably the right one for him. There was a smoothness to his game last night.
Yeah.
I thought he moved well.
He did
Which is weird because it was the second night of a back-to-back, so that's counterintuitive with a guy who's working his way back. Maybe the second night of a back-to-back shows that he's still knocking rust off and he was a little more in rhythm. I don't know. I thought he moved well. I thought physically he looked okay last night. But he doesn't trust his body.
Yeah.
And that anytime he's in the air, and look, I get it. You know, that's a horrific injury. And it took Paul George a little while. I don't think it took him this long. Because Paul George, A, came back by the end of his season. And then by year two, you know, after a little 10-game chunk, maybe not even a 10-game chunk, at the end of the year, he came back the next year and was right. Anything in the air, Gordon Hayward doesn't trust his body. And I don't totally know how you fix that other than playing him through it. But if you're actively hurting your team in the meantime, and I think they're struggling. Like, you know, you want to take it to a bigger picture with this West Coast trip. They should be 0-4. They should be 0-4 on this West Coast
trip. The comeback against Phoenix was great, but Phoenix was sort of complicit in their own demise. They sort of started playing the clock, and that's a brutal Phoenix team. And down the stretch, nobody other than Devin Booker was really doing anything. I'll tell you another thing I've noticed about Hayward, and I saw it again last night a couple of times. You know, Donovan Mitchell took him, to the hoop. I think Crowder attacked him at one point. I feel like defensively, even though the defensive numbers with him on the court are really good. Now, a lot of that has to do because he's part of that starting lineup, which has been really good defensively, at least leading into this road trip. But I feel like teams go at him.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like guys go at him and try and, like, TJ Warren went at him a couple of times in that Phoenix game.
Oh, they're picking him out.
Yeah, like they're saying, like, this is a guy that we can take off the dribble and we can get the shot that we want, or we can get to the rim against Gordon Hayward.
I don't disagree with that at all. In fact, the first couple of games of the year, he got the Ben Simmons assignment in game one. Who did they play the second game? Because I remember
Toronto.
He got the Kawhi. He got the Kawhi assignment, and not like he got it exclusively. Like Jalen's going to get his minutes on these guys, and Marcus Morris. Like they're gonna throw waves at these guys, and you're going to get different bodies on different matchups, and they're going to switch and all these other things. But early in the year, that's what they want to do with him. They want to give him tough assignments, and right now, not even the tough assignments are going at him. Like you just said, TJ Warren's going at him, for God's sake.
And even some of the communication, there was a pick-and-roll switch he had with Jaylen Brown last night where the communication just was bad, and it ended up, you know, a layup at the rim for Utah. And I don't know who made that mistake there. I mean, it could just be guys that aren't really that familiar playing with each other, that have only really played with each other for 11 games. I don't know what the situation is. Scalabrine talked about it, said, you know, it was a situation where clearly the communication wasn't right on the pick and roll defense. Are you going to switch or you're not going to switch? But it looked to me like, you know, Gordon was a half step late and seeing sort of the switch situation develop. So I think defensively, even though all of the advanced metrics and stuff with him on the court, the rating stuff will tell you that it's been good. If you just watch it with your eyes, and even Grandy commented, I think it was the Milwaukee game, you know, teams are going after Gordon Hayward. I do think people are hunting shots a little against Hayward on the defensive end for the Celtics.
617-779-0985. What's wrong with the Celtics? How concerning is this West Coast trip? And more importantly, what do you do with it? You know, how do you fix what's going wrong? I don't know that patience is necessarily the right way to go about it. Just keep rolling them out there. Just keep doing the same thing, and everything will fall into place. Again, 617-779-0985. What do you do, Gasper?
Well, I've mentioned this before. I mean, I think somebody has to go to the bench. You know, either it's Jaylen Brown or it's Tatum, who they basically, censured the other night in Phoenix, in the second half, he didn't start. He was off on that game. Or it's Hayward. No, I think it probably should be Hayward. But I think based on ego, expectations, relationship with the coach, paycheck, that they're leery to do that. I think they feel like maybe that looks bad for Gordon or he starts to doubt himself. I just think it would be a little less pressure for him and a little easier for him if he were playing with the second unit. And then once he gets it going, you can bring him back. Also, I think with the second unit, I think he could handle the ball a lot.
True.
And you could play Terry Rozier off the ball, and Rozier could look for some of his shots off the ball.
So I think for all the reasons you just detailed, it's tough to go to Hayward and do it. It's just not the kind of thing that NBA players want. And this is the, I don't think it's the kind of thing anybody wants in any sport. This is the issue with the Celtics. Like, how do you figure out how to keep everyone happy?
It's tough.
When they're not the 08 Celtics. Like, the 08 Celtics, and I think it was fair to question them at the time. I wasn't really in the media at the time, so I wasn't thinking about it critically, but I think a lot of people probably did. Are all these guys willing to sacrifice? And it turns out they were. It turns out that Kevin Garnett was willing to sacrifice shots, and Ray Allen.
Well, Allen was willing to be the stand in the corner guy.
All of his quirkiness was willing to do it, right? Paul Pierce would sacrifice and step up a little bit more on defense. Like, Pierce probably was the one who sacrificed the least, I would say, in terms of shots and things of that nature.
Well, trying on defense was a big sacrifice.
Right. So for Paul, he went out there and actually tried on defense and took a tough assignment on the other side. Bench guys sacrificed. Like, that team was willing to sacrifice, and they had guys at stages in their career where they were willing to sacrifice. They had all done it on their own and knew it didn't work. Outside of Horford, who's that guy on this team? Like, Kyrie's one.
Yes.
And I don't know that winning again is his main motivation. Maybe that's an unfair assumption on my part.
He wants to prove he can do it without LeBron.
I do think he wants that, but I also think he's a little hung up on the movies and the singing and everything. Like, I don't always quite know what his...
But I think that makes your point. The fact that, you're saying Horford, like, who's the guy that's tried it on their own and hasn't done it? It's Horford. Like, even Kyrie, who's won, looks at it and says, yeah, I won with LeBron, but now I need to, like, do it on my own. So I think your point is well said. Yeah,
okay. Like, so I almost thought that hurts my point a little bit. He's motivated to win without LeBron.
I think it makes your point. You have all these young guys that feel like they can kind of do it on their own, or trying to do it on their own, or still trying to grow their brand or their reputation in the NBA versus the 08 Celtics, where those guys were like, our reputations are set. The only thing that's going to burnish it now is winning a championship.
So maybe there's a gray area with Kyrie, but I wonder what his motivation is. Gordon Hayward, if you could get him quietly in a room where he'd admit what his main motivation is it a title or is it reestablishing what he was?
Wow. I mean, I think...
It's reestablishing what he was. I'm sure he wants to win. I'm not saying he doesn't want to win. But I think that's secondary. Like, I think what he's motivated by is being the player he was before the injury. I think that's what drives. Look at the commercials. Look at all the videos he's leaked out over time.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Are they willing to give everything up to win a title, or do they want to establish themselves as all-stars?
I think they want to establish
themselves. Marcus Morris, is he willing to sacrifice, or does he want a contract? Like, Terry Rozier, contract. Marcus Smart maybe fits more in the Horford thing, but I think he wants to justify his deal.
No, I think he wants to win. So, and he's the guy that's talking the most about guys not being focused and not sacrificing. That's Smart. I think Smart got his money, wants
so
to win.
I'd acknowledge that Smart may be closer to Horford than a lot of the other guys. What's the motivation on this team? Are they willing to sacrifice? I think that's a big question.
It's a great point.
And is Gordon Hayward willing to do that? If he is, he'd go to the bench. If he is and the coach asked him, he'd go to the bench. But I think that's a rocky road to navigate in all sports, especially with a team like this with high expectations and star power. 617-779-0985. We can get into some of the other issues on the road trip. That Phoenix game was a disaster. You keep referencing Marcus Smart, his comments about the team. We can dive deeper into that as well. Gasper and Murray, Sports Hub Celtics show here on the Sports Hub. No Big Jim. Adam Jones in for Big Jim. Chris Gasper here from the Globe. We'll get to your phone calls next.
Mortgages.
Join Planet Fitness by November 14th for just 25 cents down, $10 a month with no commitment. Join today in club or online at planetfitness.com.
Join Planet Fitness for 25 cents down and $10 a month. No commitment. Offer ends November 14th.
See club for details.
The 99 would like to thank our military for their service to our country with a Veterans Day special. Active military and veterans will receive a free lunch entree with purchase of another entree on Sunday, November 11th at all 99 restaurants.
Esports and gaming is your thing? 98.5 The Sports Hub brings you the first weekly talk show dedicated to discussing video games and esports. Sunday nights at 11, it's Checkpoint Radio. It's a gaming show hosted by gamers for gamers. Checkpoint Radio, Sunday nights at 11 on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
He's going to pull up and shoot a three. Got it.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Smart gets it away to Rozier in the offensive end. Rozier throws it back towards Marcus Smart. Straight away three. Got it. And that's what you get. Marcus Smart, almost everything he does is climbing off the canvas. And he does it again.
Made the play happen then. That was nicely done.
Marcus Smart can't make a three until it matters the most.
It was 12-0 runs, you know, in the first. And then they had another one at the end of the second half. Then another one to start the third. Just can't have those. It puts you in too big of a hole. It's tough to beat a good team if you play 36 minutes of good basketball.
Was it that much? Was it that much, Brad? 36 minutes of good basketball? It's Brad Stevens on the Celtics, their performance last night, a 123-115 loss in Salt Lake. Gordon Hayward's return to Utah. It is the Sports Hub Celtics show, taking you up until 1 o'clock. Adam Jones and Chris Gasper taking your phone calls, 617-779-0985. Even I would acknowledge that Marcus Smart had a pretty good game down the stretch last night. He was one of the few guys that seemed engaged in that game last night, one of the few guys who hit big shots down the stretch. So he had a nice air ball with about 6 minutes to go in the game last night that I tweeted out. I was watching the replay last night, Gasper. I almost woke up the house cackling at.
Oh, your wife must have loved that.
I got a good chuckle just reflexively kind of cackled at about 3 a.m. when I was rewatching that game when Marcus Smart airballed the three. That, yes, I almost woke up the entire house doing. But he played well down the stretch in that game last night. You sense that he's one of the few guys who maybe has the right mindset. We were talking about sacrifice and willing to give up your own situation for the betterment of the team. He seems like one of the few guys who may be on the beam with that.
Yeah, and I think he's been sort of outspoken after the Phoenix game. Remember, he had the comments about, you know, good teams don't wait until they're down, you know, 22 to play. The good teams come out and do it from the jump. And then he had some comments, you know, last night that a number of the reporters had. I happen to see it on the Mass Live website, and, you know, we'll see if we can track it down. But I can just tell you what he said. He said, we have a lot of guys, they can score the ball on the offensive end, but you have to play defense as well. It's one thing to outscore your opponent, but another to stop them from scoring as well. Right now, we're not outscoring our opponents, so you have to stop them. The day we decide we've had enough and own up and hold our ground one-on-one in team defense, we're going to continue. Quote doesn't quite make sense. I think the way this is supposed to go is when we decide to do this, we're going to stop getting hit in the mouth. He's basically calling guys out.
I gotta be honest. I just completely disagree. What's their problem right now, Gasper? Is their problem defense?
Well, they're giving up a ton of points on this trip. I mean, they've dropped down to like fourth in the league in defensive rating.
What's their issue all year? Defense? You said they're fourth in the league in defense? Their offense stinks.
Yeah, it is.
That's their problem.
But on this trip, and I think what he's speaking to, on this trip, you're looking at Oladipo, who's like a guy you know is going to light it up, beats him, hits the game winner, right?
Yep.
Then you go to Denver. They have a scouting reporter in Jamal Murray. They let him get 48 points, and the most resistance they show is when Kyrie throws the ball into the stands at the end of the game. Against the
By the way, you say they. Marcus Smart was a big factor in Jamal Murray getting his 48 now.
Yeah, it's true.
Marcus Smart was one of the guys helping him get 48, just FYI.
I love you, Jones. You're the best.
Like that. Like it's not like it was somebody else's assignment there, Marcus. You were one of the guys on him. Oladipo, I'd cut you a little more slack. Keep going.
Devin Booker goes off for the 38.
Yeah, but I mean, Booker's part of his job. Yeah.
Yeah. So Booker does that. And then, you know, what do you think of Joe Ingles, the 20 points in the first half?
So Ingles is not really his assignment. I would say Oladipo's not really his assignment, though I'm sure he got some possessions on Oladipo. Yeah. What was up with Joe Ingles last night?
Dude, he was lighting it up in that first half.
What doesn't fit? What doesn't fit in this scenario? Victor Oladipo, Jamal Murray, Devin Booker, Joe Ingles? Like, that one's not really forgivable, now is it? That one's really not forgivable.
But I think he's talking about it. You're saying both team defense and one-on-one, you know, we have to hold our ground. And so you're right. I agree with you overall. Defense has not really been an issue for this team. I do think it has been on the trip, but the reason I bring it up is it speaks to what you said in the last segment, which is our guys focused on sacrificing for the team or on establishing their brands as NBA players, maybe on or off the court? And these comments from Marcus Smart seem to indicate, he's talking about, we have a lot of guys that can score the ball, but you have to play defense as well. Well, you know, if you're going to be on the cover of Slam Magazine and, you know, ooh, all this other stuff that's going on, are you going to build that brand with defense, or are you going to build it with offense? Because it seems like everybody's trying to build their brand with offense now in that Celtics team.
So you think he's talking about Tatum?
I do think that could be a Tatum reference.
Interesting. So I was thinking Rozier. Rozier was actually the person that I thought of when you were reading those comments. I'm like, you know, it's hard to move merch, Gasper, when, you know,
the Scary Terry merch.
Yeah, when you're locking somebody down. It's hard to sell your Scary Terry hoodies and your Puma shoes. It's hard to do that when you're locking someone down. It's a lot easier to do when you're lighting them up for 22, like Rozier had last night. So I thought Rozier. Tatum's an interesting one. Tatum has been very disappointing for me this year, and I'm not telling you, like, I've soured on the talent or big picture or anything like that. I don't think he can play anymore. Just the selfishness that has creeped into his game is a little bit of a turnoff.
He's been a little one-dimensional. It's like, I'm just going to go one-on-one.
And his
shots don't seem to come in the flow of the
offense. He had the 5 steals last night, right? So, I mean, he's doing some other things, I guess. But, no, I was reading Zach Lowe the other day. Took me a while to get through the whole thing.
Oh, you know? 10 things?
Yes, yeah, the billion words when, you know, we could maybe... The man might need one of the Globes editors is what I'm saying. Maybe trim things down a little bit, right? Word count, Zach.
Well, you know, he's like doing it the old... It's like the old Bill Simmons column.
No, it is exactly like an old Bill Simmons column. It's true. Try an editor over there. But the Tatum thing to me was interesting, which was... He cited how basically all of the shots that Tatum got at the rim last year have turned into long twos and mid-range jumpers is how he put it. You know, he's taking 11% more mid-range and 11% fewer at the rim. So basically he's sacrificing shots at the rim and all that comes along with it. When you're driving to the rim, you can drive and kick. The defense is sucking down. You're getting to the free throw line. There's none of that in his game this year. He gets the ball stops. He tries to go one-on-one and he's launching it up from the mid-range long twos. Like that's not how you want him playing. That's not how he played last year.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. He hasn't been as efficient. And again, I think that just sort of speaks to, I've said this before, when I look at the main unit there, you know, the starting five unit, I feel like a lot of times those guys play better when you subtract one of them and you put a Marcus Smart or Marcus Morris in there because those guys have more defined roles offensively. When I look at that main five, what I see a lot of is sort of this idea of instead of trying to be the best they can be collectively, it's everybody trying to be the best they can be individually. And it's like taking turns. It feels like, you know, it's like wrestling. Yeah. It's like a tag team match. It's like, okay, you know,
your possession.
Tag,
my possession.
You're in, Gordon. Run this pick and roll possession.
Yeah.
And now this possession is going to be for Kyrie. And we have to get it to tag Tatum. It's your possession. Now we're going to ISO you over here on the wing. It just doesn't feel
like that's how guys press. Oh, it's my turn. I have to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, this is my opportunity to go get mine.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, that is how it's, especially with the three wings, especially with Jalen and Hayward and Tatum. They have not figured it out. They have not figured out how to mesh together yet. 617-779-0985. Let's go to the phones on the Sports Hub Celtics show. Pat, you're next up. What do you got, Pat?
Hey, how's it going? I think it's full panic mode. I mean, it's not clicking. Too many guys are flushing shots. I'm not down on Tatum. But my issue is I don't think this team could beat Milwaukee. I think the Greek Freak is the next LeBron. I'm in panic mode.
Who worries you the most in the East? Who worries you the most in the East?
You're asking me, Jones?
Yeah.
Oh, in the East? Still Toronto.
See, me too.
The way Kawhi has played, Serge Ibaka is like, you know, Lazarus at this point. And I think people undersold what a strong 3-and-D guy was what Toronto needed. And I think Danny Green has been wildly underrated in that deal. He's been great for them this year. So I was still Toronto, but Milwaukee, I'll be honest with you, the East is better than I thought. I didn't think the East was going to be this good.
I agree with that. The East is definitely better than I thought. Milwaukee's better than I thought. But we talked about this with McCone's guy there, Stool Greeny, Dan Greenberg. And I thought he made a fair point. I think Milwaukee and Philly have a little bit of a matchup issue with the Celtics.
Okay.
Like I don't know that they match up well. Whereas I think Toronto is a tough matchup for Boston. If that makes sense,
that makes some sense. What's the nature of the? I would agree generally with Philly, what's the nature of his issue? Milwaukee
is switching everything on defense and giving the Celtics wide open threes. That's why they bombed away and hit 24 threes or whatever it was. They didn't guard well. Their defensive system is they're giving up these open shots.
Yeah, that's Budenholzer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll give up threes, which is weird in today's NBA. But I mean, look, he's a new coach, he's new to them. I get that. That requires a scheme adjustment. But is that what it's based? Is it based on scheme or talent? Because from a talent standpoint, like, I think the Celtics struggle to stop Chris Middleton, and Giannis gets whatever he wants. So when I look at it, I think those are two pretty evenly matched teams, as evidenced by the playoff series. So if there's some sort of change or adjustment in coaching scheme, I think Milwaukee doesn't have an issue.
But hang on, the playoff series, there was no Kyrie.
That's true, and that's fair. But I mean, they've only played one game this year with those guys. And I thought that was, you know, I thought Milwaukee was competitive.
Honestly, they impressed me a little bit in how many times I thought they were about to get knocked out, and they continued to make it competitive. And that game was at the Garden, so fair enough.
I'm just saying, like, I agree with what he said. I'm just saying that schematic, that's easier to fix than not having the talent. I think Milwaukee has the talent where that's not a terrible matchup. Whereas I feel like, you know, the Sixers can't shoot from the outside. Like,
They're just,
I mean, Landry Shamet has been shooting well. He really should be playing over Fultz. And so for the Sixers, if they're not going to shoot those threes and the Celtics don't have to respect it, then that is a legit matchup problem. Like, you don't have the right combination of players. The Milwaukee thing, I think, is fixable from a coaching standpoint.
617-779-0985. You can jump in on that. You can jump in on the Celtics and their road trip. I do want to get to Terry Rozier. His name popped up this week. Not happy with his playing time. Maybe the Celtics should look at moving him. We'll get Chris Gasper's thoughts on that after Hub Headlines from Tim McCone.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is Gordon Hayward on the home of the Boston Celtics, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
A second remaining, the Boston Celtics have found the Boston Celtics of a year ago. They've come from 22 down to tie it.
Suns win the opening tap of overtime. 5 minutes on the clock. We start over again, tied at 100. Kyrie with the Horford screen. Going to try the right side anyway. Attacks the baseline, switches to the left hand and scores. Kyrie has all 6 Boston points in the overtime. Morris, touch pass to Jaylen Brown for 3.
Man, this is a show now. Give me 2 sandwiches, please.
Now back to Horford. He's open. Straight away 3. Got it.
He was doomed.
Al Horford knocks down a 3. Marcus Morris drives around Booker, gets to the cup, lays it in, and the Celtics have their first 2-possession lead of the night. The Celtics answer emphatically. They storm from 22 down to beat the Suns in overtime.
We didn't deserve to win the game, but it was a great individual performance by Kyrie, certainly, and Morris hit another huge shot for us, but we have a long way to go.
That was the one win for the Celtics so far on their 5-game road trip. Still one more to go out in Portland against Damian Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers. Last night, Celtics fall in Utah. Earlier in the week, they did come back from 22 down to beat the Phoenix Suns. It is Adam Jones in for Big Jim Murray. Celtics Sports Hub Show. Chris Gasper, as always, here from the Boston Globe. Celtics talk goes until 1 o'clock. We'll be here until 2. Taking all your phone calls, 617-779-0985. I know I mentioned Rozier. I want to get to him in a moment.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, though, on the 22-point comeback. Is that something that we should get worked up and excited for? I mean, I know it's nice that they came back. It's always better to lose than win rather than lose the game.
Yeah.
I understand that. But I have a hard time getting worked up about that comeback when this team and the expectations have shifted. Like, those 22-point comebacks were fun when it was Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas. And that team, we knew deep down, wasn't one of the better teams in the league, wasn't a true championship contender. A team like this, I can't overlook that they were down by 22 to Phoenix in the first place. I can't ignore that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think even the sound we just played with Brad, you know, he sort of tempered it and said, you know, we didn't deserve to win. I mean, that's coming from the head coach. And I think against most other teams in the NBA, you probably would have lost that game. Maybe the Hawks are the only other team I can think of where you would have been able to pull that out. Just young team, inexperienced team, didn't execute well down the stretch. Certainly the Celtics made the plays they needed to play, and Kyrie was fantastic in that game, but you can't rely upon that. Look, no matter how you slice it, Jones, I don't think that anybody either in the organization or outside the organization feels like the Celtics right now are anywhere close to their potential, are playing anywhere close to their potential at this point.
Do you think trading Rozier would help? Do you think getting someone out of that logjam? I know you mentioned earlier, maybe you can de-emphasize Hayward on offense. Maybe you can move Hayward to the bench. Those are moves, you know, internally that could help. If you're looking to clear up the rotation a little bit, get more minutes and more shots and more touches for some of these other guys, would you entertain moving Rozier?
I would entertain it, but I don't think that that's the panacea. I don't think that that's, you know, the fix. My concern with Rozier is that I don't know if he's – I want to give it a few more games, and by a few, I mean, like, you know, more than a few. I mean, like, 20 more games.
Sure.
To figure out if he can adjust to this role. You know, I was talking to Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston, and he brought up an interesting stat. He said, you know, if you looked last year at Rozier's per 36-minute output, it was, you know, identical – basically whether he was starting when Kyrie was out or coming off the bench. But if you just watch it with the eye test, my feeling is he's much better in the role of starting.
Yeah.
And so I still question whether he can be as effective a player or a player that they want or need in the limited role, which is his role for this team, as opposed to being out there and being able to be out there for 36 minutes and take 13 shots like last night. But I want to give him more time to try and adjust. But that's why when the whole discussion about Smart or Rozier, I looked at Smart and said, okay, I know this guy in limited minutes can make an impact in other ways. Rozier to me still feels like a volume guy, where if he's out there and he's not out there for enough minutes or getting enough shots, what's his impact? What's his value?
Yeah, so I'm a Rozier over Smart guy, but I'd acknowledge that he's better in the starting role than he is in a bench role. I'd acknowledge that. Do you think he's still here? Or Danny hasn't moved him because they still don't know about Kyrie.
Yeah, I do.
See, I do too.
I think he's Kyrie insurance. And I've made this analogy before. I said it's sort of like a Jimmy Garoppolo, Tom Brady thing, right? Like if suddenly there's an injury or the guy falls off or something happens, you know you have this other guy who can step in and play at a really high level.
He goes back on his word.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, I mean, any of that, right? He goes back on his word.
Yeah.
He gets hurt.
Yep.
He's not the same guy. There's a million reasons for it.
Yeah,
so no,
totally.
I'm not really in favor of moving Rozier either right now. I would acknowledge, I think it would clean up some things. You know, one less guy that has to play and cares about his shot. Obviously, he cares about his shots and his minutes and everything. He's popped off now twice in the first 10 games. Once through Bill Simmons and once after the Orlando game. So he's making it known that he's not thrilled. And I think getting rid of that could help. But I think having Kyrie insurance is more important. And I think, you know, the potential that if Kyrie gets hurt or falls off or goes back on his word, you want to make sure you didn't
totally
sell low on Rozier.
Exactly.
617-779-0985. How about Billy in Taunton? Go ahead, Bill.
Hey guys, I see two things with the Celtics that were a part of last year's success that I don't really see this year. And one of them was defense for me. They get like points off turnovers and stops, and I feel like the defense isn't as there as it was last year. And the second thing was ball moving off of screens. I don't feel like they're setting like screens like good enough like they used to last year, and the ball movement's been a little stagnant. It's a little bit more ISO. I don't know. What do you guys think?
We talked about that with Tatum earlier. I 100% agree. And I don't know if they're like, if it's starting with Brad where there are less designed off ball screens, which it sounded like he was hinting at. I just think the ball sticks with a couple of guys. It always sticks with Kyrie, even last year, and now it's sticking with Tatum. And I think that's the issue when it comes to the offense becoming stagnant.
Yeah, I agree. I think guys have to trust the offense more to get them their shots. I also think, you know, I was just looking at it, you know, the Celtics right now have the second most made three-pointers in the league. I thought in that
game, they?
Yes.
Oh, that is not how they should play.
See, that's the thing. And I thought that I think they've gotten a little bit lazy offensively, and they're looking for the easy way out, which is the three-point shot. And I thought there was a sequence in that game last night, Jones, where that was evident, where they were playing the, you know, obviously playing the Jazz here, and they get into a circumstance where the game's pretty close, and you have Rozier come down and fire up a three-pointer that's like, it's not a terrible shot. He's open. He's created some space, but it's literally like the first look that they could have gotten offensively. At this point, it's 105-98 Utah with 6:05 to go, and he fires up that three. They don't move the ball at all. Then they come down again, and Marcus Smart fires up a three, and that just stuck with me because I feel like they're just looking for the easy way out offensively. They're not really looking to execute. They're not really looking to move the ball. It's like, okay, I created enough space here to take this shot, and I'm just going to take it.
It's interesting. when the Celtics really shouldn't play that way, right? They really shouldn't. So I look at that and I say that's an issue that I've had with them, especially after that Milwaukee game, right? We referenced this earlier, 24 threes in the game. When the shot's falling, it's great. You know, when the shot's going down, it's great. It's all well and good. It's awesome. But that's not the way they should play. You're not the Golden State Warriors.
No, you're not.
You're not that kind of team. You don't have that kind of skill level. And I think laziness is a piece to it, right?
Yeah, it's an available shot. It's like, this is the first available shot. Instead of working for a better shot, I'm just going to take this one.
Yeah, that's been bothersome with them. Anyway, I think we have a little bit of breaking news out of the NBA.
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Yeah, the Eastern Conference just got a little more interesting. Shams just tweeting out, Philadelphia finalizing a deal with Minnesota to acquire Jimmy Butler. So Jimmy Butler headed to the 76ers.
Huh? What did Butler say last night? I just pulled this story up on Jimmy Butler. I hadn't read it yet. He was asked about playing a bunch of minutes last night. And he says it has to stop. He was asked why. It's because we got a bunch of other guys. So he's bitching about playing too much now.
He said we've got effing 14 other guys.
So he's pissed about playing 41 minutes in the game. Maybe forgive me. I don't know how close the game was last night.
He's like the Le'Veon Bell of the NBA. He's basically like, I'm conserving myself for my next contract and my next team. That's his whole vibe.
So finally he pissed off even Thibodeau. You know, Thibodeau was like his biggest supporter in the organization. Yep. Finally he pissed him off and a deal is being finalized. Jimmy Butler to the Philadelphia 76ers. So how about that? Right there in your own backyard, right there in your own division.
That's interesting. Jimmy Butler.
I mean, how do you feel about the fit? How do you feel about the fit with him and Fultz and Simmons and
Embiid? We don't know who's going. Maybe Fultz is going out.
That's
who's
a fair point.
Who's going out in the deal?
So take Fultz out of it because it probably would be Fultz, actually. Or maybe not even.
I have no idea who's going out in the deal.
Superstars go for nothing in the NBA nowadays, yeah. So maybe it's not even Fultz. But I'll tell you, Butler's not. It's another star, which I never want to bet against.
Yes.
He's not exactly what they need, right? That guy's not a shooter.
He's not. I mean, he can knock down threes. At least he'll take them, unlike Simmons.
Correct. He's not petrified to take them like Ben Simmons.
He doesn't think the line's radioactive like Ben Simmons. But
that guy's not a shooter.
He's not, but he's a scorer.
He is. He's a good two-way player.
Yep. And I could see him playing well off of Simmons and getting some open shots. And again, he's not the greatest shooter, but he'll take him, and you have to respect it. That could open the floor a little bit more for Embiid at times. And I think he gives them some toughness. One thing they struggled with in that series with the Celtics last year was wing defense. Butler can play wing defense. He's not as good as he used to be, but he's physical, and he'll play tough wing defense.
Zach Lowe just tweeting out, the deal is going to include Robert Covington and Dario Saric. I'm not sure if there's anything else, but those two are headed to Minnesota.
Well, that feels like a little – they're giving up a little bit.
Yeah, Saric, I like Saric.
I feel like wouldn't Philly want to protect those guys in their rotation? So Fultz not part of it.
I mean, Covington is a 3-and-D guy, and he wasn't great in the series against
Boston. Butler's like a significant upgrade on Covington, for sure. I just felt like that's a guy you would have wanted to keep around.
Well, Saric can shoot. I mean, you know, Saric is your sort of classic stretch four, right? Mm-hmm. And so you take that out of the mix. I'm trying to think of the rest of their roster. I mean, I know they have Jonah Bolden, who hasn't played that much. But who would be the new stretch four, or would they just play smaller? I mean, Simmons isn't Simmons is a point forward.
Well, I think the answer to that is clearly Amir Johnson. I think that's probably who that would be. Mike Muscala, you like him?
Muscala, yeah, he can shoot a little bit, so I guess he's the new stretch four. Not much on the defensive end for
that's
that
kind of gross. Wilson Chandler could do some of that whenever he comes back. Maybe he could be some of your stretch four. He hasn't played yet, right? Or no, maybe he's just...
I mean, I do think this makes the Sixers a better team. I don't understand why they didn't try and offload Fultz there, but that's okay.
I also think it makes them a better team. I don't love the fit. I will say I don't love the fit for Butler with other guys who can't shoot.
Okay.
But anytime you're adding an all-star, that's noteworthy. And Philly they've always felt a little thin.
Yeah.
You know, like it's Embiid and it's Simmons and that's it. Like now that's another legit option.
Well, I think it certainly helps if you knock Simmons down that sort of, you know, marquee a little bit in terms of needing consistent scoring from him on a night-to-night basis. Because while he can score, his unwillingness to take those outside shots makes him an easier player to defend and anticipate. So if suddenly he's like your third scorer instead of your first or second, I do think that helps. It's an interesting deal for Philadelphia because can they sign Butler long term? Is he just sort of a rental here? Can they make this mesh on the fly? And the one thing I'd say about what you said with the fit with Butler being around guys that can't really shoot, well, where's the shooting in Minnesota? It's not Andrew Wiggins.
No, but that wasn't that part of their problem? Like, isn't that part of why they didn't? I thought that team was going to be better, and that team really didn't take off.
I think their problem was Butler crushing Karl-Anthony Towns' girlfriend.
Well, I don't think that was the problem. I think there were some off-court issues there, too. I think that's safe to say. Ben Simmons, keep Jimmy Butler away from Kendall Jenner there. But I would say that, yeah, I don't know about the on-court fit and the style of, like, Philly needs shooting.
No, you're right.
And Butler does not do that.
What are the percentages? We should look it up.
I'm
agreeing with you, and
no,
I'm like, what's
no, no,
he
no
doing?
I just looked it up. This year he's like 37%,
okay,
which is not terrible. Last year he's like 35%.
Yeah, so he can shoot. I mean, 37%, again, next to Fultz and Simmons, that's like shooting 55% from three.
Yeah, I don't know that it's that much of a difference on what Covington shot. Covington on threes for his career.
Covington was terrible in that playoff series.
Oh, he's really bad in the playoff series. He's shooting 39% on threes this year. For his career, he's 36. My guess is that's not that different than Butler.
Than Butler?
But Butler's more of a volume. Yeah. And obviously, Butler actually does other things. He's not just a shooter.
So if I'm Philly, my concern with Butler is just sort of the wear and tear. Is he still, you know, the mileage on that guy is like, I mean, Tibbs kind of ran him into the ground.
Oh, no kind of about it. He's been run into the ground. Butler for his career, 34% on threes. So not great. He's been better recently. You know, he's 37 2 years ago. He's 38 this year, 35 last year. So
he's solid.
He's not
a pure shooter. Honestly, to me, Jones, he's like a lot of the guys the Celtics have. They're not pure shooters, but they knock it down at a pretty good percentage.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Who's the Celtics' best shooter? Probably Irving.
I'd say Kyrie.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Butler's a good player. I don't want to overreact. But Philly needed to do something.
They did.
I will say this: Philly needed to do something. I've ripped on that matchup a lot. The NBA has been trying to make it happen that Celtics and Sixers are a big rivalry. Getting another stud. Who knows how long he's going to be there for? But getting another big time player, and Butler is that. It's going to help because they needed to do something. Just like Toronto needed to do something. You can't keep going with DeRozan and Lowry. You just can't do that. Yes. It doesn't work. This wasn't working with just Embiid and Simmons, so they're trying. They're trying with Jimmy Butler. 617-779-0985. What does that mean for the Celtics? What does that mean for the division? Maybe Philly smelled a little blood in the water? Celtics a little vulnerable with the way they're playing? 617-779-0985. We can get to that. Tim McCone has your Hub headlines at the top of the hour, and we'll start mixing in more stuff on the Patriots.